Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of season 12 of Movie Minute, the Daily Podcast, as we dig our way through the 1994 Morgan Freeman, Tim Robbins film, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Derek McDuff of the Underrated Podcast and the Aminadeus Podcast. I got that right?
Yeah, you got it. It's a tough one because I made that word up.
It's always nice to make up words, isn't it?
It is. You know, Shakespeare used to do it, so you know it's a fun thing to keep doing.
Ah, so you compare yourself to Shakespeare? Is that what you're
we're in the same ballpark. He might be on the field. I'm in the stands.
Okay, that's fair. And in what sport is that?
You know, the sport of writing.
The sport of writing. Okay. Okay, fair enough. So, Derek, why don't we start off by you telling everyone and me, what is your history with the movie The Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, Shawshank is one that I didn't see the whole way through until later in life, until probably my, 20s, I want to say. I think I'd seen bits and pieces of it on TBS, like everyone else, you know, because that's obviously how the film kind of came to popularity. Was being run on the cable television many times over, but I didn't watch it until I want to say in my early 20s, watching it with my brothers. One of the first times I watched it, because I've only seen it two or three times, was when one of my brothers had a court date, and the other brother decided to put it on to mess with him. It was a little bit of a mean prank to just kind of psych him out. It is very, very mean.
That is very mean. Wow. And I mean, what did he do? I mean, did he cut the brakes on his wife's car and end up killing the neighbor and her kid also?
Luckily, nothing like that. It was just some underage drinking. is what it was.
Okay.
But he did not end up going to jail or Shawshank Prison, or anything like that. I think it was a bit of community service or something.
Okay, and he got community service for it?
I want to say, this was a while back, but yeah, I know he definitely did not have to go to any prison sentence of any kind.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did not have to deal with the system.
That's good too, that's important. Well, we'll find out about that, the beginnings of that this week. Did the judge look at him and tell him that you seem to be a very icy and cold young man?
You know, I wasn't in the room, so that's entirely possible. That very well could have happened.
Okay, I hope not.
We hope.
You should ask your brother if he wanted to watch Shawshank, you know, before you started talking about it.
Yeah, just like come on over, and you know, we'll relive some memories.
Yeah, apparently. Actually, which brother would you invite? The one.
Oh, the one who I would probably invite the prankster, not the prankee, I guess.
Okay, yeah, you could invite both.
there we go. Just get everybody together
for the McDuff brothers.
Yeah. Exactly. All three of us back together again. Yeah, watching Shawshank.
That works. That sounds like it was something that would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to spend an evening.
That's true. yeah. So, in other words, you have fond memories of Shawshank.
Yeah. No. It's you know. It's a enjoyable movie. I think I also watched it for a podcast years ago or something. No, I didn't. That's not true. I came up
you're
in a podcast
it,
that I had recently
it now
watched
now for a podcast.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I am. I did, and then I of course rewatched it. You know, a week or two ago in preparation for this the whole way through. Even though we're only of course talking about 5 minutes. You want to get the whole context of the movie to refresh yourself when you're talking about a film on these Movies by Minutes podcast, in my opinion. I don't know if all your guests do that. I definitely do.
Let's put it this way. I appreciate that you do that because I have had guests that didn't I've had guests that haven't watched the movie and just watch the segments that we talk about, and the conversation is usually quite jarring because of
Yeah,
that.
I would imagine so. You know, like if we were watching this minute without any context, you would not have any idea who any of these people are, what is going on, why they are in a prison. You know, it would be completely nonsense, you know?
Again, I can't say it's always been nonsense because, when on those occasions where I've had that, so I've seen the movie, so I can sort of steer them in certain directions when needed. So that definitely makes a lot of sense from that perspective. But
I could see it being like, oh, here's like a fun bit, but I don't think it would be incredible for a discussion for conversation.
exactly. I mean, again, I like last season because I did Band of Brothers and there were 10 parts, so I did have guests that only watched the entire part, but I also had guests that only watched the 15 minutes that we talked about and didn't watch the entire part. And I'm saying, okay, you watch 15 minutes, watch another 45 just to get a clear idea as to what's going on. But again, the conversations still were interesting because of the, again, because I also know I was able to fill in the gaps with different things.
And that's why, you know, I didn't appear on last season is because, you know, we're talking about Band of Brothers. I hadn't, you know, as I told you, I hadn't seen Band of Brothers, and I would have wanted to watch not just the part and the episode, but the entire series. And I was like, I don't know if I have time to commit right now to watching this whole mini series. As much as I do enjoy being on the podcast, I would that would be quite a commitment for just one podcast episode. Or
No,
five,
yeah,
I guess.
it would have been three episodes, but yeah, that's regardless. But no, but what it comes down to is there I did have a few guests that hadn't seen it and they requested early episodes so they can watch, just one part or two parts, before the conversation keeps going. That type of thing. So
Which,
that worked too. I
yeah,
should
which
probably get
it
back
makes
in.
sense.
I should probably get back in touch with them to see if they actually ended up continuing to watch it or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I used to do another podcast where it was the premise was I show you an episode of a TV show, and do you want to get into the whole show based on that? But that was kind of a different animal. It's kind of like, okay, we're watching this in the context of like, does this lead into something? Rather than we don't know the rest of the context. Because there's definitely stuff in these minutes that we're going to talk about here that I think is I can talk about how later on in the movie it comes back around. So I think it is, you know, not required, but it's definitely once again good to have that all that information so you can say, ah, this is, you know, some foreshadowing here or whatever it might be.
That's true, but then that's the way that's the way movies work. I mean, you always have Chekhov's whatever. So here we have Chekhov's the sisters, or Chekhov's poster. These types of things.
Chekhov's baby bird in a pocket.
There you go. Exactly. But again, one of the ideas of writing a story is that you do want references at the beginning to things that will happen later.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want stuff to just come out of nowhere. You
Set up and
want to know.
payoff.
That's right. That's right. That's the way it does. That's the way it's supposed to. We get Jake, and then we find out a little more about Jake later, and that's it. It's like it's not. I mean, again, if you were to read the book, you'd get even more about Jake because the book mentions Jake also.
And I'm sure that book is real long based on what I know about Stephen King.
The book is 72 pages.
Oh, because
It's
it's just a short story, right? It's part of the four
a
seasons.
novella, right? It's part of four
Ah,
seasons.
okay. Novella,
Eternal, I think it's called the Eternal Spring or something like that.
And it's three of the four have been turned into movies. Two are really good movies, and one is apparently not very good.
That's right. Apt Pupil is not very good. It would be interesting if they actually ever made the breathing method, and because of the way that people are still using King. They're trying to find as many short adaptations to put to the screen or TV or whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised if one of these days someone does come up with the idea of how to do it.
Right, yeah. Like, you got to complete, go 4 for 4. You know, you can't leave it at 3 for 4.
That's right. But it's been a very long time. I mean, after people came out in, I think, 98. So we're talking again almost 30 years. What's 28 years since that one came out. You know, it was
Yeah.
it we had that 12-year period where Stand By Me came out in 86, this came out in 94, and that one came out in 98. You know, so
Yeah.
that's
Yeah. Yeah.
but I mean, App Pupil, the book is better. But my assumption is based, I mean, I'm impressed that you know about all four of them, but you haven't seen but you haven't read them.
I mean, I am an avid reader, but I, I don't always usually read things that are based on movies that I've liked. Sometimes I do, but I usually try to read the books that, like, I'm reading, stuff like, I'm reading Once in the Future King right now, for example.
A short book, you know.
Oh yeah, short 4 books.
No,
But I'm also not like the biggest King guy. I like a lot of his adaptations, as we'll talk about later, but I haven't read a lot of his stuff. I don't think he's a bad writer, but it's not just necessarily my favorite.
okay. I mean, one of the things that I always loved about King is the fact the way that he is stories just flow. And the way he develops his characters and stuff like that. So for me, that's always been amazing to listen to that and to watch that, to read that and then watch it. Because that's the thing. When you read it, he's really descriptive, but then in the movies, it's not as descriptive for obvious reasons.
And I do think he is somebody who his writing, like a Michael Crichton or something like that, lends itself very well to the language of film. I think it is why we've seen part of the reason why we've seen so many adaptations of his work, besides he's just very prolific and he writes like 15 things a year, is that his story writing is something that, sometimes you read something, you're like, well, how are they going to turn this into a movie? That's not the case with Stephen King.
Right. The way that he writes stuff, it's basically, okay, I'm writing this as if it's going to be a movie.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes a lot of sense that we've gotten so many King films.
I also like the connections he makes between stories that like in Apt Pupil in the book, he mentions Andy Dufresne, like in passing. And he uses the same towns, he uses Castle Rock very often. And uses dairy, and there's always connections to the various stuff. So I always love how he does that.
I'm a big fan of that. I do think that's cool. It's something that up until, the kind of rise of the Marvel Universe and everybody kind of copy their style, do the cinematic universe trend. It's something we didn't see a lot in movies. It was something that we've seen a lot in literature, and now they're starting to, I think, do that a little bit with some shared DNA with the Kingverse. There was that show, I forget the name of it, that aired last year. That was a, it, I think it was Welcome to
It was
Derry,
called.
right?
It was called. There
Or
was Welcome to Derry, and there was also, I think, Castle Rock at some point, wasn't there?
yeah, okay, Castle Rock. Yeah, so it's like, tying a lot of these shared universes together, which, it's cool. It's very cool that they're doing that, and it's cool that it's finally getting realized now in, film slash TV media.
Very cool. All right, so minute 21 begins with the morning alarm ringing, and ends with Boggs looking at Andy seductively.
Very
So
clean minutes, I will say. Very, very clean minute. One of maybe the most clean minute I've ever seen in one of these shows I've guested on.
exactly. So we ended things on Friday with basically them hauling fat ass out of the cell block, to taking him to the infirmary. That's more or less how things have been left. And things begin with an alarm going off. So we're going to right off the bat start talking about alarms.
Everybody's favorite portion of the show, alarm talk.
That's right. Why not? So basically, what do you know about prison alarms?
Not too much. I mean, this is, for a little peek behind the scenes, this is kind of take two of doing this recording. We had just started, and this is where we were left off last time, and we had talked a little bit about the history of alarms. But we didn't get too much into it, so all I know is from our previous discussion, really.
Okay. So basically the loud piercing alarm that you hear in a prison is you most commonly known as like an emergency type of siren, and the roots of it go all the way back to the beginning of the 1800s, around 1819. There was a French physicist named Charles Cagniard de la Tour who was able to develop an instrument that would measure sound frequencies. And by doing so, it eventually evolved into a warning device, which wasn't something that he had obviously expected. For a lot of times, people invent things and didn't expect that that's the way it could go. He named it Siren because of the he was using it as a reference to Greek mythology. Because the whole idea of the females, the sirens, that they could produce sound underwater. So his idea was here he was able to produce sound. And then in the later in the 18th in the 19th century, so decades later, many industrial facilities and prisons started using steam-powered whistles and simplistic sirens in order to replace brass bells that they would use to signal shift changes, lockdowns, escapes, things like that. The 40s and 50s, due to the fact that everyone was used to the idea of air raid sirens, so that was used as an influence to help change the way that they were doing things in prisons. But that's around this time, basically. And the prisons decided to start adopting, like high low tones or continuous wailing sounds like what we hear here now in order to alert the staff of things that are going on, whether it's a riot or an escape or changing the guard, or as we're dealing with here, this is basically reveille. This is okay. It's time for breakfast, I guess. In 1965, the Motorola invented the first electronic siren, and this helped make it much easier in order to broadcast different types of codes. Sometimes you might have medical alerts, fires, different problems that are going on. But basically, the idea is that the sirens themselves also used as a way to try to keep the population, I guess, down from that perspective. Because it's a shrieking sound, it's something to try to disorient the prisoners if they're in situations, if there's a riot or something like that. So they have different types of codes in prisons, and sometimes if you have like a steady tone, so that is the signal that usually denotes that there's either an escape or a lockdown, and it's also a way to warn communities, people around the prison itself that they need to secure their homes. And at the same time, the inmates need to, stand in their places. Then you have the ones that are blaring like up and down, the alternating high low tone. Those are used if there's a riot going on, if there's a mass disturbance, or some sort of big security breach, things like that. And then you have a beeping tone, which signals if there's like a fire or some other type of hazardous emergency, things like that. But then again, you have the regular sirens that denote, like now, that it's time for breakfast.
Right. Yeah, it's a stock sound that we've all heard in movies a thousand times before. You never really think about. Unlike a lot of other stock sounds from movies, like a pot breaking or the door opening, this is one that actually was not just something that a sound designer one day captured. It's not the Wilhelm scream. It's something that exists in the real world. Like this is the like as you mentioned, the kind of tone is something that exists in prisons and I'm sure other places as well, like factories and stuff like that as a measure of time to let you know, like, hey, like we said in this case, it's time to get up and get out of your cell.
Well, it's also time for us to count you. That type of thing.
Yes.
Not just get out of
Exactly.
yourself. It's we want to make sure that you're still there.
Exactly, as will come up later when this sound comes up again and someone does not get out of their cell, is all I'll say.
That's right. But again, we'll talk about it. I'll talk about it more with my guests during that week when we get there. But there is the whole idea that it is possible someone's sick. They're it's not necessarily because someone has performed a Houdini act.
Right. Or there might be, something that had, they might be sick or worse in the cell, as they are implying later on.
Or dead. That
Yes,
could be
that's what I
also.
was, yes, that was what I was alluding to in so many words.
Yes, but we have other characters who we will talk about this week that are in that type of position.
Yeah,
Let's
but
put it that.
this sound, honestly, this is a really, like I said, it's a really clean start, and this sound kind of, I feel like, denotes the real start of the movie, because I feel like the first 5 minutes are all set up, they're all preamble, and not to say those aren't good minutes, and because we definitely need them. There's a lot of interesting character work. We're finding a lot, especially from Morgan Freeman's narration, about why we're here. We're finding out what this prison is going to be like. But now this sound has started, and Andy's life has officially begun, as it will be for the foreseeable future. For the theoretical rest of his life starts right now with this sound. He's of course come into the prison. He has lived this kind of like first very rough night, but now he's stepping out. He's gonna meet Jan Pop. He's gonna become a new citizen here in his life.
Yes, that's true. And then so the siren goes off, the cell doors all open at once, which is always a cool thing to see. The fact that they know how to choose which ones to they can choose they can choose to open all of them or just some of them. And Andy steps out of his cell along with everyone else. We see that Andy is all the way at the end. He's at the end of the tier. And one of the guards screams, "Tier 3 north clear, Tier 2 south clear, Tier 3 south clear, Tier 1 north, Tier 1 south clear, Tier 4 south clear." And basically they're checking that everyone's there. And then we get a quick shot of Red. He's also coming out of the thing, and he looks over at Andy. And he's It's actually very funny because Red's looking at him because okay, you just lost me a hell of a lot of smokes, and Andy like looks up and he's looking around,
It shows he's very inquisitive. He's always thinking,
that's
he's
right.
always learning. So he's gonna maybe be putting some things together. He's like, all right, I'm in a very new situation. How do I deal with this? I need to look around. I need to get my bearings. Even in this like horrible moment, he's like, the gears are already starting to turn.
And I think it's a little more than that even because it's it knowing what happens later in the movie, it looks as if he's looking around like, okay, is there a skylight? Is there a way to get out? Like what am I he's looking forward, but his eyes like quickly dart up as if he's looking around and he doesn't want people to notice that he's looking around. That type of
Exactly. He's being very nonchalant about it, whereas everyone else is just kind of like looking ahead, Red, as except for Red, who's kind of like glance looking at him.
Right.
And we see, how the Red is at this time. Red is just kind of, he doesn't really see Andy yet. For Andy, he just sees him as like, okay, here's like the new fresh meat or whatever. He's the guy, as you said, who lost me some money. But Andy's not concerned with it. Andy's concerned with what's the next step, and everyone else is just kind of like, okay, we're here.
That's right. And then we get another shot of Red looking over at Andy, and then he looks away. And Andy then looks around and he sees the guard calls out, "Prepare to roll out." And Andy isn't really sure what he's supposed to do, but he just he looks a little confused, but he just goes and follows everyone else, follows the crowd. Then Andy turns to the right along with everyone else, and they give us a great shot. We see the guards down at the bottom, and we see the men standing literally in lines, all of them in front of their cells, and they basically just get ready to move, and then one of their guards screams, "Roll out!" And they start walking. And as they walk, the camera moves to the left, like to the center in between, or in the space between the different tiers on the sides, just to let us see the working, what is it, machinations of all these guys walking through, walking through these tiers. And it's
Right.
just great.
No, because I want to talk about it a little bit. I'm glad you brought it up because this film obviously is from Roger Deakins, who is maybe the greatest cinematographer of all time. You could definitely argue that. He is just a master of what he does. He's been hugely influential on everyone who's come after him. It's impossible to talk about cinematography without talking about Deakins. And there's a lot of stuff that when you talk about Roger Deakins, you think of the showy stuff, like these really incredible cinematic shots. But it's not all just that. It's also the stuff like this, where it is just here is a really well put together shot that establishes a great visual language for the film that lets you know exactly what is happening. A picture's worth a thousand words, so you can just very clearly establish the tone and the style and the place and the lighting, the color tone, all in just this one shot of these people walking, a slight camera move. Like you said, it's all so well done, and it's not something, unless you're at this level where you're talking about a movie a minute at a time, that you would ever necessarily talk about a shot like that. But the movie is filled with hundreds, if not thousands, of those little shots that he is just executing to perfection, and he really deserves a shout out, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'm still shocked that he lost the cinematography Oscar to Legend of the Fall.
Yeah.
Because again, this is just the cinematography here is amazing. I know I've said it so many times, and I'm going to keep saying it. I mean, we still have another 120 episodes. I'm gonna keep saying it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, there was like a long time where he was considered the GOAT, and he had been nominated, I think, f 15 or so times. Like, this was his first nomination, was Shawshank. So it might have been one of those things of like, well, it's the new kid. We'll get around to him eventually. He keeps getting nominated every time he makes a movie. Essentially, he gets another nomination. He gets another. You think of stuff like The Assassination of Jesse James, and like how beautifully shot that movie is. And finally, it wasn't until 2017 for Blade Runner 2049, and then he would win again his next nomination for 1917, that he won the Academy Award. But just a historic run of just. It's kind of like what's happening with Diane Warren and the song category, where it's like, oh, he's here again. He's getting nominated, but he's not going to win. But unlike Warren, it's like he really probably should have won multiple of those nominations, including, like I said, two in 2007, along with Jesse James. He also got nominated for No Country, but it was not until relatively recently that he was able to break through and finally get that Oscar.
It's very true. And then the shot changes, and we see Andy still following the crowd, and they're walking through like a gate. And we see Andy has to bend down a little bit because he's a little too tall. And then we see they're in the mess hall. And again, a great shot watching all these guys, watching a whole bunch of guys that are already sitting and eating. So I'm assuming that they space out the times of when different people are showing up, to get in there for their meals. But again, another great shot. And then we see that. They have the production line of everyone, moving their tray along in order to be able to get the food. I mean, it looks like it's a lot of food they're willing to give them.
Yeah, it's maybe, as we'll see in the next minute, not the most quality food, but there
That's
is at
an
least
interpretation.
qu quantity food.
Yes, that is true. And we see the guy in front of Andy gets his food and starts walking away. And then we see Andy's face as he's getting the food. We don't even see Andy getting his food put on his plate. And then Andy starts walking to try and find a place to sit down. And he passes by Boggs, and Boggs just gives him a very seductive look. And has this little smirk on his face.
Yeah, it's very, seductive slash sinister. You know, we don't know who this character is yet, so we're not even entirely sure what this look is supposed to entail. Obviously, later on in the movie, we will know who this guy is, what he is, but it is. This is as just as we had a very clean start, we have a very clean finish to the minute where now we have been introduced to essentially who is going to be our antagonist for the first half of the movie because before Bob Gunton becomes the real overarching antagonist, he is just kind of the bad guy for the first part, the kind of first, or at least maybe first third, I'm not sure how long it is, but he is the kind of first hump for him to, no pun intended, for him to get over here.
Exactly. But again, that's the way these things work.
Yeah, and I was, and one thing I was saying last time is like this movie would probably be a miniseries if it came out today, and I think that this would be right where you see the second. This would be like that's where the second episode starts. You would have that the first episode would be all of like, okay, here's the trial with Andy. Here's his. It ends with his first day, and then the second episode just starts with him waking up, and then you start to introduce these characters who are going to maybe be some tertiary characters in this series. It's interesting seeing the different landscape of 94. This is a movie that I honestly, I don't know that it would get made today. It might, but it's becoming harder and harder for things that are not part of big franchises, things that are based on books and stuff to exist. They still do obviously exist. Like Project Hail Mary was a big hit from earlier this year.
Right.
King is obviously a known marketable entity. I think this would be much more in line with TV stuff, and it does make sense. This is, movie did not do well when it came out in the theaters. It is a very big hit now. It did very well on TV, which I think lends again to why I think it would probably be a miniseries. Is that it rose? Most people did not see this movie on the big screen. Although I would say, like, I don't know. Most people have seen this movie who watch movies. Most people who watch have watched it though have probably seen it just on the small screen rather than the big one.
Again, I hope no one even thinks to try and remake this movie because it's not
Yeah.
needed. You know,
Yeah. No, it's
you have a
not.
great movie that already, and that's it, you know.
Yeah, and luckily, unlike some other Stephen King masterpiece adaptations, Stephen King likes this one, so he's not going to make a bad miniseries adaptation of it that he
You never
thinks is
know.
better for some reason.
He liked The Stand also, but they still, you know, wanted to make another one, so I don't
That's
know.
true. I mean, and there are a lot of Stephen King remakes. There's a lot of these things. You know, anything that's popular. You know, we got Firestarter recently. We got the Carrie remake a couple of years back. As you said, we got The Stand. Things are always getting turned into miniseries, especially now with this expanding. You know, King verse everything is. You know, the cinematic universe of King. So, I mean, who knows? I hope they don't remake it too. But I think Andy, like you said, Andy Dufresne does get mentioned, I think, in Castle Rock. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. It'll be interesting to see.
It's very true. And at this point, you know, as after Andy walks past Boggs, that's the way this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about with this particular minute?
Well, I would say it's interesting because, and we can talk about this more in the next minute, but you are starting to see how they're getting preparing Andy to be institutionalized. This is his first day. This is a new experience for him. You know, going down this chow line, waking up like this, you're saying, like we said, him look around, getting his surroundings. But for everyone else, they're pretty much on autopilot. This is just something they do every single day of their life for decades. They just kind of go have the same routine and you know, how they're just living their lives, you know. Their life has become lost a lot of meaning, and it's like it's one of those things. It's like, are we gonna see Andy just go down this line every day, or is he gonna not become institutionalized? Are we gonna see him in the course of the movie fight back a little bit and do things a little bit differently? And so this movie, I think, or this minute is prepping us for, you know, what how he's going to react to the rest of this time here in Shawshank.
Sure. That's great. All right. So today's segment is called Main Man Monday, where my guests will give their top five Stephen King novel adaptations. So start with your number five and work your way up. And it's the perfect point because we've talked so much about Stephen King today.
Yeah, this is, it feels very, very apt. And yeah, I love that you call it Maine Minute Monday because Stephen King loves to set his stuff in Maine.
That's right.
But
And friend of the show, Jay Kluwik, gets credit for naming that Main Man Monday. I
yeah,
loved it when he thought of that idea. So thanks, Jay.
it's very apt. But I will say number five is probably this movie, honestly. This is a good movie, as you know. Evidenced by people hearing me talk, I do quite enjoy this movie. I think it's a very good adaptation. But I do think that there are some better Stephen King stuff in it. And I'll say I won't talk about it too much because we'll be talking about a lot of this movie later on, and we've already talked about today. I would say number four is a movie we talked about a lot of Stephen King stuff that gets remade. This one was the most recently remade. That is 1987's The Running Man. I think that this movie really captures the kind of it walks this line between being goofy and being serious. It's a really tough tone to strike, and I think that the remake at times faltered, which is unfortunate because I feel like Edgar Wright is usually very good at striking that tone. But Running Man is just, it's absolutely one of my favorite 80s movies. Like, it is not my, I'm not saying it's one of my favorite movies from the 80s. There are much better movies from the 80s, but Running Man is an 80s movie, you know, like it's a movie that really could only have been made in that decade. It really captures the feel. I love the Arnold performance in it. It is just so much. Do you like Running Man?
I love the 87 Running Man, and the
Yeah.
question is, have you read the novella of the Running
I
Man?
have not read the novella. I have, like I said,
Okay,
I haven't read a lot of Stephen King.
so the novella of the Running Man is so close to the one that just came out in
Yeah.
2025,
I know it's a much more
and that's
accurate
right.
adaptation.
So, from that perspective, I'm torn between the two. First of all, I've always loved the original one from '87. I'm a big fan of that movie. I was it 14 when it came out, 13 when it came out. Loved it, and I've always loved it. And I can keep rewatching it without a problem, except for the thing. It bothers me that it takes place in 2017, but now that bothers me. Back then, it didn't. Now that we're almost 10 years beyond. No.
It's like we've caught up to them.
It's like Back to the Future. It takes place in
Yeah.
2015, and you're like, but none of those things happened. So, it's a problem.
Right. Yeah. It's, like whenever they have things named after years, like 2001 or 1985 or 1984, it's like these things are like, oh, that is history now. But
Exactly.
yeah, I love it, and I think you bring up an interesting point of, what's more important, is it having a accurate adaptation, or is it, making something that's really fun and interesting and different? And I do think, like, oh, it's cool to be faithful and stuff, but you don't it's not the most important thing. I really do prefer the 87 one, even though maybe it's not doesn't gear as close to the book. But
Okay.
yeah,
All right, that's fair.
But my number three is actually another one from that same collection of novellas, and that's Stand By Me, which
No,
is
that's Stand By
based on
Me
The
from
Body.
Shawshank. That's from Shawshank, not from The Running Man.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's from the same collection as Shawshank
Ah, okay.
from the Four Seasons. Yeah.
Right. No,
So it's one.
because The Running Man is also part of a novella. The Bachman books, which has Rage, The Long Walk, Roadwork, and The Running Man.
Right, because Stephen King was writing as Bachman because he,
He wouldn't see
A,
people
because
really
of.
like if people liked what he was writing, not because of the name.
It's also because he was writing so much that his publishers kind of made him do it. So they're worried about oversaturation. Also, it's kind of the J.D. Robb thing where he was writing, more sci-fi stuff than horror stuff. So there was a few reasons for it. But yeah, this being from the same short story or novella collection as Shawshank. This is a movie that meant a lot to me as an adolescent. It's about these four kids that go and find this dead body and all the adventures that they go on. It's just kind of your classic kid movie, but it's a little bit darker than a lot of those, like The Sandlot or something, because it obviously deals with death. But this one, it's one I haven't watched in years, but I have a lot of fond memories from it. I always think of the fact that it gets referenced at the beginning of Pokemon Red and Blue. But yeah, I love Stand By Me. Just a kid venture. without being like a lot of King stuff being mystical and magical, but it's just kind of like and it captures that unique point in your life that where you go through that.
Okay, cool.
And number two, I would say this is some real very Stephen King horror stuff. I recently would watch this one. It's so good. It's just like one of the absolute best two-handers ever made. As you're slowly watching this author, who gets in this accident, is being rejuvenated or healed by his fan, and just the kind of craziness and obsession that goes through that. It is just this masterclass in performance from James Caan and Kathy Bates, just going back and forth at it. It's just the paranoia, this horrible, like much like Shawshank, it is the guy who is imprisoned and is in this really awful situation and has to really dig deep down in himself to find a way out of this horrible thing that he has found himself in. Just one of the all-time Rob Reiner, rest in peace, one of that iconic run that he was on. So I love Misery. You a fan of Misery?
Yes.
And then number one for me is, I think it's the one I mentioned before, one that Stephen King himself is not a fan of, but I think it is just a absolute mind-bending, just full-on masterpiece. That is The Shining. Just Stanley Kubrick firing on all cylinders, giving us a movie where we don't know what is going on. Just Jack Nicholson unhinged, weird stuff going on. What is going on with this hotel? Is it like a cursed Indian burial ground, as they would say at the time? Is it just trauma? Is it just all in Jack's head? And obviously, the sequel would kind of answer some of those questions, maybe. But just as this movie, it is so interesting. It's one you can watch 100 times, and every time you will catch something different. Kubrick was clearly just having some real fun, just making one of the weirdest and most interesting blockbusters I think that has ever existed. I absolutely love the movie. It's a Halloween rewatch for sure for me. It had to be The Shining at number one for me.
All right, very cool. All right, now we have two games that we are going to play, two daily games. So the first one we will be playing today is called High Low. And the idea is I'm going to give you three different Oscar Best Picture nominees, and winners included, from 1950 until this year. And you have to try and guess what their IMDb rating is and what their Rotten Tomato rating is. Now, just to give you a baseline, so Shawshank is a 9.3 IMDb rating, which obviously is the highest. There's nothing higher than that. And Rotten Tomatoes is 91%. So for some reason, there were 9% of people who reviewed this movie that did not like it. I don't know what's wrong with them. That's a separate problem. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what you're gonna get. Okay, the 1955 film Mr. Roberts. Have you ever heard of it? Have you seen it?
This is a nominee, right? Because I know Marty won that year.
Yes, that's right. This is a
Okay.
nominee.
I've never heard of this
It's
movie.
with Fred McMurray and with Jack Lemmon. It's got a great cast. It's a World War II movie about
Okay.
a misfit group of sailors on a on the ship.
All right. So I'm essentially coming up with the score I think we'll have on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes.
That's right.
All right. This is because I feel like I would do much better on Letterboxd if it was a Letterboxd score, because I feel like I spend a lot more time on Letterboxd than those sites. But I'll say that the Rotten to and this is a Rotten Tomatoes critic score, just to be not the
That's correct.
popcorn meter,
Yeah,
whatever they call it. Okay.
the critic
Okay.
score.
Okay, good. The one that matters. So I will say the IMDb score. Let's say it is a 7.3, because I feel like this is probably a movie that not a lot of people have seen. So, and if maybe people who go back and watch it might not hold up. And then for Rotten Tomatoes score, I'm gonna say 82, maybe a little bit higher with critics than with IMDb users.
Okay, so you're closer on the IMDb at 7.6, and on Rotten Tomatoes it's a 93. One of the things you should always keep in mind is that in general, movie reviews on Rotten Tomato from movies from decades ago, the percentage is usually much higher because there weren't that many to find. You know, you're
That's
still going to be
true.
able to find them online, and the ones you're generally going to be able to find are the good ones. So
Right.
that's why there are movies that have
Yeah.
100% and stuff like that, which again, I'm a fan of Mr. Roberts. Would I say it's 93%? Probably not.
Yeah, anything before the site went live in like the late 90s, I want to say that's a very good point. And because especially since a lot of those older movies, they'll get contemporary reviews written about them, and
Exactly.
contemporary reviews are not probably not going to be about are not going to be negative for a movie that's 4 decades old. You're not just going to be like, Mr. Roberts sucks. Let me write about it, from like
That's
60 years later.
exactly. All right, let's spin the wheel for your next one, and hope it's something that there's a chance you've seen.
Right, yeah, a movie that people have heard of.
No, what do you mean, people? Well,
Sorry to all my Mr. Roberts fans out there. I know there's dozens of you.
yeah. Well, you actually get another Jack Lemmon film from
Okay.
1960, the Oscar winner, The Apartment.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is actually one of my all-time favorite movies.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
Finally, we found one to get to.
I love The Apartment. I think it's a masterpiece. It is one of the best picture, my favorite best picture winners. It's my favorite Billy Wilder, I would say probably. So this, I'm gonna try to not be too biased, but I'm gonna say for IMDb, I'm gonna say you said. This is what's the high? This one is 9 point what?
Rushing is 9.3.
So I'm gonna say that's I know people love The Apartment. I'm gonna say it's an this is very high obviously, but I'm gonna say it's an 8.9. I'm gonna say it's a high eights for sure. No, I'll say 8.7. I think that's a little. I'm gonna say 8.7. I think it's because IMDb users are fickle. And then for critics, I'm gonna say 99. I think that this is it's gonna be that same thing of like people looking back on this fondly. I mean, I almost am tempted to say 100, but I'll leave 1% margin for error there.
Okay, well, yeah, you were closer with the IMDb. IMDb
Okay.
is 8.3, and you said 8.7,
Okay.
and it is a 93%. So
Man,
there's
7% of critics need to find a new profession.
well,
The
again,
Apartment is a perfect movie.
we can say the same thing about Shawshank. I still don't get
Yeah.
that one, but okay, you deal with it. All right,
Yeah,
let's
oh
do the
man.
wheel.
Apartment's a big one for me. That's like I like Shawshank, but Apartment is one of my favorite
Yeah,
movies.
no, I completely agree with you on that one. Oh, I love The Apartment.
Yeah.
It's on my short list.
That is yeah, that is a make sure to give me a call for when you do that one. That is a Swiss watch of a movie. I'm gonna put my flag in the land right now and call. I want to talk about the scene where she opens the cracked mirror. I would like to stake my claim.
I'll try to remember if I ever get there. All right,
Okay.
let's spin the wheel for your final of these. Okay, the Harrison Ford 1985 film Witness.
Oh man. Now this is another movie that is very high on my list of absolute need to watch. Big Pete Weir fan. This is Pete Weir, right? Or am I conf
Yeah,
okay.
Peter.
Yeah. So, very high on my list of movies I need to watch. I'll say just okay, so The Apartment was 8.3, which is I'm going to take that into consideration for Witness here. I'm going to say this is an 8.1 because obviously this is a very good movie, very beloved. But so I'll put it up there with that. And then for critics, we'll say, let's say Witness, because I don't think it was a hit at the time when it came out. I want to say, let's say 87.
Okay, so you went a little too high on the IMDb and a little low on Rotten Tomatoes. On IMDb, it's a 7.5, and on Rotten Tomatoes, it's a 93. Which, if I'm remembering correctly, over the last three, well, I think all three of the ones that we just did were 93s, which is
Oh
pretty
wow.
interesting.
Something, someone who knows about numerology, tell us what that means. Shout us out.
I don't.
Yeah, neither do I. But
All right, and now we will play the second game, and the second game is called Name That Book Adaptation. So the idea here is that basically I have a list of movies that are based on books, and the thing is that the movie has a different name than the book did. Okay, so what I'm going to
So
do is I'm
it's
going to
a Stand By Me situation.
exactly. That's correct. So I would, for if the answer is Stand By Me, which I think is on the list anyway, but I'll give it to you if that. So if I were to say a movie that came out in 1986 called The Body, that's the idea here. All right, so we'll spin the wheel and see what you get for today. Only one. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 2004, and the original title is The Man Who Was Peter Pan.
2004. Hook. Hook.
No, Hook came out in
No?
1990, 1991.
Oh, 91, right? Because it's before Jurassic Park. Okay. The man who was Peter Pan. 94. Okay. Trying to think of 94 movies that were either. Probably was not, I guess, a Peter Pan adaptation then. It was probably just allegorical. Finding the Other Line would have been way too late. I'm drawing a blank on this one.
Okay, it was directed by Mark Forster, and it stars Johnny Depp.
So is it Finding Neverland, or is that, I feel like that would.
It is Finding Neverland. Very good.
Okay, I thought for some reason I thought that came out later on. So okay, Finding Neverland.
And it was a that was also a Oscar nominated Best Picture.
Okay. All
All
right
right,
then.
excellent. So Derek, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me if you head over to the Underrated Movie Podcast. You can listen to that however you're listening to this. Just type in Underrated Movie Podcast. It should come up in your podcatcher of choice. You can also go to underratedmoviepodcast.com. And as you mentioned, I also host the show Omnia Deus that it's a bonus podcast I'm doing for my Patreon, where I am in the style of Movies by Minute podcasts. I am doing Amadeus, but I am doing it in 15-minute chunks because I am it's just a bonus podcast. I am not dedicated enough to be doing a whole podcast on a 3-hour movie in minutes, if 1-minute chunks. But that is one of my favorite films, so I am breaking it down in 15-minute chunks. So you can listen to that for $3 a month, if you want to get that. More than halfway through the movie at this point. You can listen to that, or you could just check out Underrated anywhere.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living
Or get busy dying.